ever catch yourself doing something like, you just knew you shouldn't be doing?
Oh, yeah.
It's like we're all kind of
Yeah.
hardwired to, I don't know, mess things up, you
Right.
know?
Yeah.
And you sent me some really interesting stuff about how Christian theology has wrestled with this,
Yeah.
like with this core of human nature, this idea of original sin.
Yeah, it's interesting because there really is like a whole spectrum of ideas, even within Christianity,
Right.
about
Yeah.
what this means and how it's passed down and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to be looking at Pelagianism, Arminianism, and then the different schools of thought within Calvinism. Now, that might sound a little bit like a seminary class, but I think understanding these ideas can really change how you see human nature and our relationship with something bigger than ourselves. Our goal today is to kind of give you a clear overview of these positions and really get to the heart of what these discussions are all about.
You know, if you zoom out a bit,
Yeah.
these aren't just like
Right.
dusty old doctrines.
Right.
How you understand this basic human tendency
Yeah.
toward wrongdoing really impacts how you view things like
Yeah.
salvation,
Right.
personal responsibility,
Right.
even the nature of God's grace.
Yeah.
So these things that might seem abstract
Right.
actually have really important implications
Right.
for belief and how people live their lives.
To get us started, one of the sources you sent mentioned this illustration used by Charles Finney. Now, I should say, I don't actually agree with all of Finney's theology, but this picture he painted I thought was really useful to visualize these different ideas about sin and how we're saved.
And it really helps us understand these different systems and how they approach human ability or inability to, contribute to their own salvation. So it puts human agency under the microscope a little bit.
So picture this, okay? Someone's in the Niagara River,
Oh boy.
heading towards the falls.
Not a good place to be.
Definitely not a good place to be.
No.
And God's on the riverbank, ready to offer a hand. So Finney used this to illustrate a few different viewpoints. The first one is Pelagianism, which he called human monergism.
Human monergism.
So let's break that down. Mono means one, and ergism has to do with work
Work or action.
or action. So human monergism means it's all on the human.
Yeah, it's a very self-reliant.
There are strong swimmers in the Niagara.
Very strong swim.
They can just swim to safety on their own.
That's right.
They only need God's help.
So in that picture, then,
That's right.
the role of God's grace in salvation
Yeah.
becomes almost unnecessary.
Right.
The source actually points out
Uh-huh.
that this removes the need
Yeah.
for divine assistance
Yeah.
in the act of being saved. It's
What?
purely human
Yeah.
capability.
It's interesting the source kind of throws in this almost parenthetical comment that it's not nice to go around calling your Roman Catholic or Armenian friends Pelagians, which I don't know what to make of
Oh,
that.
it just shows you
Yeah.
how kind of controversial and bloated these
Right.
terms can be
Right.
sometimes.
Yeah. But getting back to Pelagianism, your material did highlight one perceived strength of it, and that is that Adam simply set a bad example for the rest of us.
Yeah, that certainly resonates with how we experience, behaviors being picked up and passed on and so on. But the question is, can that really account for this, deep-seated corruption or even guilt that the concept of original sin tries to get at? Can simply being a bad example really explain the kind of profound, pervasive nature of sin that we see in scripture and in human history?
And the source also brings up Romans 5:1-19, where Paul repeatedly says that death came to all people because of Adam's single sin.
That's right.
And it poses this question: can such a universal and devastating consequence really be chalked up to just a bad example?
Yeah, it feels like it's
Sounds to
got to be
me.
more fundamental than that.
Yeah.
The sheer weight
Right.
that Paul gives to Adam's one act
Yeah.
and its consequences for all of humanity, suggests it's more than just a behavior to copy.
Right.
He uses language like trespass, condemnation, disobedience.
Right.
It's pointing to a change in our legal standing and even our very nature.
So then the source brings in S. Lewis Johnson's take on Romans 5.14.
Okay.
And he points out that some people die without committing sins in the same way as Adam.
Right.
So in other words, they didn't, you know, personally transgress a direct command from God.
Right.
Like Adam did in the garden.
That's right.
So if Pelagianism is right and we only sin by following Adam's bad example, how do we explain the death of these people who didn't sin like him?
Yeah, this is a really good point that Johnson brings up.
Yeah.
Because if death had sway even over those whose sins were different from Adam's specific act, it implies that there's a shared consequence that we inherit from him, regardless of whether our actions mirrored his... Exactly.
So, okay, Pelagianism.
Right.
The person's a strong swimmer in the Niagara. Mm-hmm. They can get themselves out.
Right.
Now let's look at Arminianism.
Okay.
What's their take on this person heading for the falls?
So Arminianism offers a kind of middle ground perspective.
Okay.
They agree that humanity is born with a corrupt nature because of Adam's sin.
Uh-huh.
They acknowledge that widespread impact of the fall.
Right.
But a key difference is that they say we're not born guilty for Adam's sin itself.
Gotcha.
We inherit a bent towards sin, a tendency, but not the blame for Adam's specific action.
So the source points out.
Yeah.
Some real strengths in the Arminian view.
Right.
It acknowledges that sin's corruption is pervasive after the fall.
Right.
And that humanity cannot save itself without God's help.
That's right.
That's a pretty big step away.
Yeah.
And from that Pelagian self-rescue.
Yeah. It really recognizes our dependence on divine grace.
Right.
That's one of its key strengths.
But then they introduce this concept of universal prevenient grace.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
So this is a cornerstone of Arminian theology.
Okay.
It's this idea that there's this work of God's grace that comes before salvation.
Uh-huh.
And it counteracts the effects of the fall.
Okay.
And empowers people to use their free will to either accept or reject God.
Okay.
And it's universal, meaning it's extended to all people.
Okay. So we're born impaired.
Yeah.
But God kind of kicks in right away.
Right.
And levels the playing field.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Right.
It gives everyone a real shot.
So the source also raises some questions about this view.
Uh-huh.
One of which is that it doesn't fully explain how Adam's sin affects his descendants. It just kind of says it did.
Yeah, it just says it was determinative for each person.
Right.
But it doesn't explain how that determination happened.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a gap there.
And then the source also takes issue with this idea of prevenient grace.
Right.
Specifically, that it enables belief.
Okay.
The argument is that while the Bible talks about grace, it says that grace saves us. Mm-mm. It comes before our salvation.
Yeah.
It doesn't explicitly say that it enables humans to believe.
Right.
So the source suggests that this understanding is more of a tradition within Wesleyan theology.
Yeah. This is a key point of debate.
Yeah.
It's important to ground theological claims in Scripture. And so while it acknowledges that the Bible talks about grace, it questions whether this specific function of prevenient grace enabling belief itself really has a direct scriptural basis.
Okay, so Arminianism, the person is in trouble.
Yeah.
But they can call for help because God's given everyone a little push.
Right.
Now we get to Calvinism.
Okay.
Or, as the source puts it, the Augustinian-Calvinian position.
Yeah.
How does this Niagara River illustration play out here?
So Calvinism is very different.
Okay.
It's what they call divine monergism.
Divine monergism.
Divine monergism. And remember, mono means one.
Right.
So the emphasis here is on God's action alone in salvation.
Okay.
In this picture, the person in the river is unconscious.
Okay.
They can't help themselves at all.
Wow.
God takes all the initiative, jumps in the river, pulls them out, brings them back to life.
So Calvinism is saying that humanity is not just born with a sinful nature, but also guilty
That's right.
from birth because of Adam's sin.
That's right.
And that's before we even do anything ourselves.
Before we do anything. We're not guilty for our own actions.
Right.
We're guilty because of Adam.
And this is that word imputed, right?
Imputed.
Like someone else's debt being put on our account.
Yeah, like a legal reckoning that's placed on us.
Right.
This imputation of both the guilt and the corrupted nature stemming from Adam's sin is really what sets Calvinism apart from Pelagianism, which denies it completely, and even from Arminianism, which accepts the corruption, but not necessarily the guilt for Adam's specific sin.
Now, things get a little more complicated.
Right.
Because the source then dives into some internal disagreements within Calvinism about how exactly Adam's sin and our sinfulness are connected.
So they all agree on the idea of imputation, but they have different understandings of what the reason for it is. So it's like they agree the light bulb is on, but they disagree about how the electricity is getting there.
Right.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's start with the first one,
okay,
which is called the representative view,
okay,
also known as federal headship.
Right.
The idea here is that Adam acted as our representative.
Yeah.
Our federal head.
The president.
Yeah, like a
president. Negotiating a treaty on behalf of a nation.
Right.
That's right.
So we were, in a sense, on probation in him.
That's the idea.
When Adam sinned, his guilt and his corrupt nature were imputed to all of us.
That's right.
Because he was acting on our behalf.
That's right.
The source mentions some key figures who supported this.
Right.
Like Louis Burkhoff, John Marius, Louis Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And a key argument in favor of this is that it seems to line up with how Christ acted as our representative.
That's right.
As described in Romans 5.
That's right.
So just as Christ's righteousness is credited to us, Adam's sin is counted against us.
That's right.
Because he was acting on our behalf.
It's a very strong parallel
that's
drawn there.
Now, the source also mentions this split within federal headship between immediate imputation.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty technical.
This is a little bit in the weeds.
Yeah.
But it basically comes down to how directly Adam's sin is imputed to us.
Okay.
Immediate imputation says there's a direct transfer of Adam's guilt to us.
Okay.
Immediate imputation says we inherit a corrupt nature first.
Okay.
And then because of that corrupt nature, we're guilty.
Okay. So it's the order of things.
Yeah. It's the order of transmission.
Okay. So that's the representative view.
Yeah.
Adam's our appointed negotiator and we're bound by his failure.
Right.
What about this natural headship view? This seems to go in a different direction.
Yeah. So realism suggests that we were actually present in Adam.
Okay.
Like in a germinal or seed form.
In a seed form.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the idea is that the whole human race actually sinned in him.
Okay.
We weren't just represented. We were there.
We were there.
In a seminal form.
Wow. Okay.
The source mentions Erickson as a proponent of this view.
Uh-huh.
And this is connected to the traditionist view of the soul.
Okay.
Where it's passed down from parents rather than being created individually.
So the argument here is that because we were literally present in Adam, it's not unfair that we get the corrupt nature and the guilt.
It tries to address that question is it just to inherit guilt for something you didn't do?
Right.
And it says, well, you were there.
Right.
You participated.
Now, after laying out these two views, the source moves into kind of an evaluation, focusing on the weaknesses of both natural headship and that immediate imputation version of federal headship.
Right.
Let's start with natural headship.
Okay.
The big issue seems to be this alien guilt problem.
Yeah, this is the big one for realism.
Right.
How can we be held guilty for something someone else did, even if we were supposedly present in him in some way?
Right.
The source quotes S. Lewis Johnson, who argues that guilt requires conscious self-determination.
Yeah.
You have to actually do something wrong.
Right.
How can you be guilty for something that happened before you existed?
And then Johnson raises some other interesting questions, too. Like, why are we responsible for Adam's first sin, but not for any of his later sin, or even for Eve's sin?
If we were all in him,
shouldn't
we share in all of their transgressions?
And the source points out that federal headship offers an answer to this.
Right.
Adam was our representative.
That's right.
In that initial act. And that's the one that counts against us.
Eve wasn't our representative.
Right.
In the same way.
Another criticism of natural headship.
Yeah.
Is that
right.
It seems to say that sin
yeah.
is a result of the act of all humanity.
Right.
Because we were all in Adam.
Uh-huh.
But the source points out that Romans 5 consistently says that sin and guilt are connected
right.
to the act of one man.
One man.
Adam.
Adam
not the whole human race.
Right. So that raises some questions about realism.
And then we're back to that issue with Romans 5.14 again.
Right.
About those who died without sinning, like Adam did.
Right.
If we all sinned in him, as realism says,
yeah.
how could our sinning be different from his?
That's a good question.
Right.
It does seem to create a bit of a tension there.
Johnson also brings up
yeah.
this parallel between Adam and Christ.
Right.
He says that just as we're justified by Christ's righteousness, which is alien to us.
Right, alien to us.
Our condemnation comes from Adam's guilt.
Right.
Which is also alien to us.
So this parallel fits better with the representative view right. where Adam acts for us.
All right.
The way Christ acts for believers.
Now let's move on to the weaknesses
okay.
of mediate imputation.
Right.
So this is the version of federal headship that says we first inherit a corrupt nature.
Yeah.
And then we're considered guilty.
Right. So they're trying to get around
right.
that problem of alien guilt by
right.
saying,
right.
well, we're only guilty
yeah.
because we're corrupt.
Yeah.
Not the other way around.
Okay. Somehow. So the source points out
yeah.
that the traditional federal headship view, what's called immediate imputation,
yeah.
says that Adam's guilt
right.
comes first
uh-huh.
and then our condemnation
right.
and then our corrupt nature
right.
as a result of that.
Immediate imputation flips it.
Right.
They're
yeah.
trying to make it a little easier to swallow by
yeah.
saying, well, you're not guilty for something you didn't do.
Yeah.
You're only guilty because you're corrupt.
Right.
Right.
So the source has some objections to this approach.
Yeah. What are some of those?
One is that it interprets that phrase yeah, yeah. all sinned in Romans right. 5.14
yeah.
to mean all became corrupt.
Right.
Which doesn't seem.
Yeah, which is a bit of a stretch
yeah.
of the Greek there.
More importantly, it goes against Johnson's argument
right.
that Romans 5 links death and condemnation
right.
directly to Adam's sin.
Directly to Adam's.
Without this intermediary yeah. step of corruption.
So there's no middleman.
Right.
It goes straight from Adam's sin.
Right. To condemnation.
To condemnation.
And then it also creates an inconsistency with the Adam-Christ parallel.
Right. Because if we're justified by an alien righteousness,
right.
Christ's righteousness,
uh-huh.
then condemnation should also come through
right.
an alien guilt.
Right.
Not through our own corruption.
Right.
The parallel seems to break down.
And here's a really insightful point, I thought.
Yeah.
If this inherent depravity.
Mm-hmm.
is a punishment for Adam's sin.
Right.
Which it seems like it is.
It's hard to argue
right.
that it's not some no. kind of negative consequence.
Then guilt must have come before that.
That's right.
You can't be punished.
You can't punish someone
right.
for something before they're guilty of it.
Right.
So guilt has to come first.
Right.
And then the corrupt nature.
Finally, the source mentions this
yeah.
historical criticism. From the Helvetic Consensus,
okay,
which was a statement of Reformed beliefs.
Mm-hmm. 17th century?
Yeah, from the 1600s.
Yeah.
They argued that
yeah.
mediate imputation basically gets rid of
right.
the imputation of Adam's sin altogether.
Gets rid of it entirely
yeah.
and makes corruption
right.
the cause of God's wrath.
So it's like they're saying
yeah.
by trying to soften
right.
the concept of imputed guilt, mediate imputation actually undermines
right.
a fundamental idea.
Of Reformed theology.
Of Reformed theology,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
So as you can see,
yeah.
this question of
yeah.
why we humans seem so prone to messing things up
yeah.
is anything but simple.
No, it's not.
There's a lot of different perspectives here.
A lot of different ways to try to explain this.
Yeah, and these are just some of the key ideas
yeah.
within Christian theology.
So we've looked at Pelagianism,
right.
which emphasizes self-reliance. Arminianism
yeah.
with its grace-enabled free will, and
right.
then Calvinism mm-hmm. with its understanding of the
yeah.
huge impact of
right.
Adam's sin.
And then we even looked at how Calvinists themselves
right, disagree
but,
about
yeah.
how this all works.
Yeah.
So
consider this.
Yeah.
How do these different understandings of original sin
yeah.
affect how we see human nature?
Right. Host speaker.